One. Stay tuned for the Sean Casey Show, a podcast for patriots. We the people are back. We are gathered together once again for another episode of the Sean Casey Show, a podcast for patriots, where we the people gather to foment the organized resistance to the march to Marxism, which is exactly what Chairman Joe and Cackling Commie Harris, they want to take us down that magical yellow brick road where they're going to transform the United States into the Marxist little hellhole that they envision for us all. Of course, they won't be affected, but the rest of us will. We're joined in the fight each and every episode by our executive producer, Joe Hosny Armacost.
Yeah, good morning. Good day. It's really kind of a bummer to do the show today.
Yeah, it is.
You know what I mean? It really is. We got to do it because, you know, you and I have been in professional radio for a long time, you longer than me, and you know you got to do these things. And it's more than the show must go on. We have to do it because we have things to say about
it. Right. Well, so, it's both. Yeah. And our associate producer, Michelle Drasella, is here along with us. Hello, Michelle.
Hi. How's everybody doing?
It's a tough day.
Yeah, it is.
There's no doubt there's a tough day. And I like to look at it this way. First off, you know, your thoughts and prayers and hearts go out to the people of Uvalde, Texas, and all those parents, grandparents, families, teachers, their fellow classmates, 19 children murdered in an elementary school by a, we don't know what he is. He's certainly a crazed gunman, that's for sure. But we do know a couple things, and I want to start with that. Let me start with our founding fathers, because you're right, Joe, this is a tough show to do, but I always try to approach it from, let's try to learn from this. Let's stop kicking the can down the road, because we hear, and I think one thing that on both the right and the left and the center, everybody agrees, we have to do something. Something right. Needs to be done to stop the madness, to stop the killing and the wholesale slaughter of innocents. And so I think we'll start with that premise. We all agree. Now, how we get there, we're going to probably diverge a little bit. But when discussing firearms in these United States, the founding fathers felt it so important to make sure they put an amendment in. It's the Second Amendment, but I think it's the most important because it guarantees our freedoms, our liberties. But the Second Amendment, in which basically says that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That is a constitutional, unalienable right given to us by God. And the reason why our founding fathers put it in there will become painfully obvious to you in just a moment. George Mason, one of our founding fathers, and there's a university named after him in Northern Virginia, referencing advice given to the British Parliament by Pennsylvania Governor Sir William Keith in debates during the several state conventions and the adoption of the federal constitution back in June of 1788, said this, quote, "To disarm the people is the most effectual way to enslave them," end of quote. And then to the Virginia Ratifying Convention, George Mason said, quote, "I ask, who are the militia? They consist now of the whole people, except a few public officers," end of quote. And by that he meant people like General Washington and his commanders, but the militia is all of us. It does not necessarily mean military, because the militia is made up of citizens. And this is the reason why the Second Amendment was put into our Constitution, enshrined, embedded in our Bill of Rights, of which the first 10 amendments to the Constitution limit and restrict what government can do and enable what the individual can do. And the reason why we have the Second Amendment is to make sure that we had protection against a tyrannical form of government. So we would not be enslaved. We would not be forced to worship a state religion, or we would have to suffer through a dictator or an autocrat or authoritarian like King George III. That's what they were coming out of. You got to remember the context of the day. That's what they were coming out of. So this idea of individual liberties and freedoms and being able to worship what you wanted, to say what you wanted, to be free of having to force, to have soldiers live in your homes, unwarranted search and seizure, all of this guaranteed by the Second Amendment. Has the Second Amendment been abused over the years? Yes, as many of the amendments have. But that doesn't mean we ought to cast it aside and make sure that they're guarantee a way that they can enslave us in the future. So it's not there for hunting purposes, although it was used greatly in the Founding Father days. And people still hunt. Law-abiding, gun-owning Americans hunt on a regular basis. Some target shoot competitively or just for recreation and for fun. But it is this protection of one's life and property from a tyrannical government, from an unruly mob. I keep hearing this argument that, you know, what do you need a semi-automatic rifle for? Because somebody in that mob, somebody in your country may have one or may have something even better, a fully automatic. You need to have that kind of firepower to protect yourself. And the vast majority of gun owners in our country are law-abiding. And we keep talking about common sense gun control. That's what we keep hearing from, and we'll get to the great exploiters here in just a second, some of our elected officials who are basically so selfish they seek to exploit and politicize a tragedy while there are still people missing, while the bodies are still warm, while parents are desperately trying to contact hospitals and funeral homes to see the status of their babies and little ones. That, to me, is despicable. But the common sense gun logic I want to share with you here, and this is very simple. It is not the gun that kills. It is the person who pulls the trigger that kills. No gun or a series of guns or set of guns are walking around basically going off by themselves, shooting and killing people. Guns can be used to assault. Absolutely. Guns can be used for defensive purposes. And I just want to say that if you are, I don't know why this shooter in Uvalde, Texas, on his 18th, after his 18th birthday, went out and bought two semi-automatic rifles. We now know what his plan was, but the people in the gun shop where he bought them in Texas, he purchased them legally. He passed a background check. And when we talk about common sense gun logic, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. That's it. Unfortunately, we don't have enough good guys with guns in crucial areas. Let's look at the list here in this episode, and that is, who do we protect and what do we protect with guns in our society? We protect the President of the United States. Secret Service agents are armed. We protect members of Congress, Capitol Hill Police. We protect governors with guns. We protect celebrities, have armed security in many cases. Some athletes at sporting events, we have armed police officers in attendance. We protect banks with guns. We protect jewelry stores with guns. When we're transporting money from one place to another, we protect that money and gold and valuables with guns. But what do we do when it comes to our children? We put up signs that say, this is a gun-free zone. So where are our children on the pecking order? They're certainly not our priority, are they? I mean, one could make the argument that they're way down the list. And I think that's what's wrong. We now have to adopt a mindset of guarding our children much better than we have. We didn't learn from Sandy Hook, the worst episode of gun violence when it comes to killing children in our history. Didn't learn from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Let's learn from this. Let's do something. Let's make a change. In Florida, they did. They put in what was called the Florida Guardian Program. So we're going to get into some solutions here in just a second. But yeah, that's basically some common sense gun logic that nobody wants to talk about. And yet in this particular case, we have a could be a disturbed individual. The other thing we have to acknowledge as human beings is that evil exists.
Right.
I mean, that's always, since the dawn of time, since the beginning of Adam and Eve, evil exists and will always be tempting us. Some people give in to the temptation. Others can successfully resist it. So when you look at these precious little souls, these 19 children and their classmates who are going to be scarred for life, imagine. You read these stories, you see their faces, and you say, there but for the grace of God go I. Now, I also had heard that this is a, and if it wasn't for a Border Patrol agent who rushed into the school and shot and killed the shooter, the carnage would have been much worse because he was loaded for bear. He bought over 350 rounds of ammunition. And he took four or five 30-round mags or magazines, clips, as they're known, into the school with him. And he fought back against the first responders. They distracted him, and the Border Patrol agent was able to get in there. So it's just the guy shoots his grandmother first. Shoots her in the face. She is in critical condition. There was conflicting, contradictory reports. She'd been killed, and then she survived, and she's in a bad way, and she needs your thoughts and prayers. But nobody normal shoots their grandmother at all, let alone in the face. This is aberrant, abnormal, disturbed, evil behavior. Now, we'll get into the causes here in just a second, but clearly... they've scoured his social media, and he did post photos on Instagram before the mass shooting at this Texas school. But immediately, coming off his disastrous to foreign road trip, Chairman Joe was shoved a speech into his face and said, "Here, read this." And the problem I have with Joe Biden in this particular case is that he is supposed to be the uniter. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's supposed to unite the country. There'll be plenty of time to discuss policy differences, solutions, etc. But at this moment, at this raw, vulnerable moment, a grieving nation, a mourning nation, needs to be consoled. We need our leader to tell us that this is horrific, but our thoughts and prayers are with these families. We will bury the dead. We will mourn, and we will come together to find out how to fix this. Instead, we got this from a selfish politician who I'm sure is thinking about midterms before he is these families.
As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done? I am sick and tired of it. And don't tell me we can't have an impact on this carnage. The idea that an 18-year-old kid can walk into a gun store and buy two assault weapons is just wrong. What in God's name do you need an assault weapon for except to kill someone? These kinds of mass shootings rarely happen anywhere else in the world. Why? They have mental health problems. They have domestic disputes in other countries. Why do we keep letting this happen? Where in God's name is our backbone to have the courage to deal with it and stand up to the lobbies? It's time to act.
I don't know what offends me more, probably the repeated references to God. All of a sudden he's invoking our dear Lord. Where was our dear Lord's name when he was arguing for abortion?
Exactly.
And this idea that an 18-year-old kid, we send 18-year-olds to war who fight and die for the United States, for our freedoms and our liberties. Yeah, that's young, 18, but you're considered an adult, a young man at 18. You're no longer a kid. If we can send you off to war, and then certainly if you wanted to go and buy a firearm and pass a background check, which the kid or a man did. So you just don't know the evil in one's heart or their intent at the time of the purchase. But then he goes off to the gun lobby, of course, which would be the NRA, which does, remember what the NRA does. The NRA makes sure that we remember that our Second Amendment right is protected. Because without it, you lose your First, Third, Fourth, Fifth, all the way through the Tenth Amendments. And you'll see what happened to people like the folks that live in Australia, where they can lock down and basically run roughshod over their entire people because they took their guns. So there he is, rushing to the microphone, trying to capitalize, which is what they do. They never let a good crisis go to waste. I just find it extremely, I think it's inhumane to try to exploit a tragedy like this. But it wasn't just him. Kaklyn Kamla also was addressing a group of elected officials, and she said this.
It keeps happening. So I think we all know and have said many times with each other, enough is enough. Enough is enough. As a nation, we have to have the courage to take action and understand the nexus between what makes for reasonable and sensible public policy to ensure something like this never happens again.
I heard the same speeches after Sandy Hook, you know, after Parkland, Florida. Same speeches, same sentiments, same political tropes.
Well, you know, the gun control didn't stop Waukesha, Wisconsin guy to kill and run over a bunch of people in a Christmas parade.
No. And that is something that, you know, they will look at it as it doesn't matter if somebody is that disturbed, if they're that evil, whatever tool they can find.
Right.
Whatever exactly. Tool, whether it be a car, whether it be we've had a number of group multiple stabbings. We've had people beheaded in the streets of the United Kingdom by Timothy radical McVeigh. Islamic fundamentalists. Timothy McVeigh, ammonium nitrate fertilizer, took out an entire building. It is very sick. It is very sad to see this, but you can't run to this gut instinct reaction that we need to ban all the guns. For instance, when they did ban the so-called assault weapons back in the mid-90s, what happened is crime did not tick down significantly. We didn't have any major profile mass shootings for a while, but we did have people that would then use semi-automatic handguns instead of the semi-automatic long guns. So, and by the way, the criminal element will always find a way to get illegal guns into the United States.
Yes.
And then, so if you can't go into the gun store and buy one legally, then you'll get one off the black market if you really are truly that motivated. Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat socialist from Connecticut, going after his Republican counterparts.
I'm here on this floor to beg, to literally get down on my hands and knees and beg my colleagues. Find a path forward here. Work with us to find a way to pass laws that make this less likely. I understand my Republican colleagues will not agree to everything that I may support, but by doing something, we at least stop sending this quiet message of endorsement to these killers whose brains are breaking, who see the highest levels of government doing nothing.
Yeah, well, I understand that. It's a raw emotional moment, but it's not a moment where you start pointing fingers. And you point fingers at the Republicans. You point fingers at the NRA. You point fingers again. And look, you had every opportunity. You've had the Congress for how long now? Since 2021. Actually, longer than that. You've had it since 2018. You've had all three branches of government since 2021. What have you done to fix it? What have you done to fix the immigration problem in our country? And anybody give you a thought? I had one person say, well, why would this 18-year-old loner who's isolated, et cetera, why would he need not one but two of these semi-automatic long guns or rifles?
Right.
May I remind you that in Texas, it is an invasion zone. You have illegal cartel gangbangers, drug runners, sex traffickers, and others, MS-13, who are, by the way, recruiting. They're in schools. And this kid, man, was in high school. He didn't graduate. That's what apparently the argument over his grandmother was. Imagine shooting your grandmother in the face because she reminded him you didn't graduate. You better make something of your life. So that's what we're dealing with. But again, you could be going in there trying to protect yourself and your family from this invasion on our southern border. So why would you need an AR-15? I don't know. Have you ever been in the middle of an unruly mob like we had in South Central Los Angeles years ago? Or we have in our major cities? Look, there are mass shootings in our major cities every freaking day. Where is Biden and Harris and Murphy at all? Do you realize that there were 28 people shot over the weekend in Chicago? Over 3,000 last year, over 800 deaths in Chicago in 1 year, many of them children. But we don't see the Democrats get up on their soapbox and talk about fixing that now, do we?
Nope.
We need to be consistent in our pro-life. And I will be the first one to say, let's protect the baby unborn child. Let's protect our children in schools. Let's protect our children in our inner cities. And let's get it all done in one fell swoop. But once again, we're going to have policy arguments over that. Then we get the sports celebrity types like Steve Kerr, who is a radical lefty. He's a coach in the NBA. He went off. Again, this is like within hours of the shooting.
When are we going to do something? I'm tired. I'm so tired of getting up here and offering condolences to devastated families that are out there. I'm so tired of the, excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm tired of the moments of silence. Enough. I ask you, Mitch McConnell, I ask all of you senators who refuse to do anything about the violence and school shootings and supermarket shootings, I ask you, are you going to put your own desire for power ahead of the lives of our children and our elderly and our churchgoers? Because that's what it looks like. There's 50 senators who refuse to vote on H.R. 8, which is a background check rule that the House passed a couple years ago. It's been sitting there for 2 years. They won't vote on it because they want to hold on to their own power. It's pathetic. I've had enough.
They won't vote on it because it's unconstitutional. It will lead to a gun registry and then gun confiscation. That's the reason why they won't vote on it. Power is a whole separate thing. But the issue here is, when you look at this, there are any number of reasons. You can't, remember the phrase, you can't legislate morality? That's what we have here. And let's look at the causes here for just a second. I remember when I was a younger boy, there was a mass shooting on the University of Texas campus in Austin. I think it was back in the mid-60s. And this was something you never heard of. I mean, this was such a shocking, stunning news story. Everybody went, oh my God, it was like something right out of a horror movie, because nobody had heard of mass shootings at this level. And it was I can't remember the guy's name, but he ended up killing 14 people and injuring 30 more. I mean, it was really shocking news. And it was shocking because our culture was in a different place. Our society was in a different place then. Our culture is rotting. And until we change our culture, until we change our approach, until we find a path back to God, until we find, until we install the values of a nuclear family again, until we respect the sanctity of life, how do we expect our children and others? It's almost like it's a lost generation, a lost culture. So I think the cultural rot and deterioration is partially to blame. In this particular case, I don't think there was a father in the home. I think it's also an ongoing issue because there's got to be somebody in the house, since you can't, and we took corporal punishment away from parents and out of schools. Remember, you used to be able to spank.
Mm-hmm.
Problem children, but now they don't spank problem children. Now they send them off to the psychiatrist, where they're usually given a prescription for one of these drugs called the SSRIs.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the discipline problem, we've got the medication problem, we have this addiction to violent video games. So you start putting this entire picture together, and not that everybody does this. No, the vast majority of people don't. But there are people who are vulnerable. So that's where I think we need to focus. We really need to focus on that side of the problem. Let me just read a few things, because I've done this. Maybe we'll do a whole show on this one day, and we'll get the experts on this. But these SSRI antidepressants, and again, for most adults, and dealing with clinical depression, chemical depression, is very challenging. And some of these drugs are wonderful. They're miracle cures, and they've helped a lot of thousands, if not millions, of Americans. So I don't mean to portray or paint a dark picture for all these drugs, but I do want to focus in on the subset here. And that is, what is the common pattern? What do we see here with these mass shooters? Well, they're usually male. They're usually 18 to 34 years of age. And usually on the younger side, we had the 18-year-old shooter in the Buffalo market last week. This week, it's the 18-year-old high school shooter in Uvalde, Texas. And there are many different SSRIs. I won't get into the science and the medical background of these drugs, but what's not known about them is what they exactly do to brain chemistry in younger people. And for some of these younger people, they can short-circuit brain chemistry. There are some very serious side effects. They're under the names of Prozac and Paxil, Luvox, Effexor, Prestique, or just some of the names. There are many others now. But during the clinical trials for these drugs, hostility, which was the term they used to include homicidal idealization, aggression, hostility presented in 60% of the participants. That's a pretty significant percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Not so much in the larger adult populations, but in the younger subsets. So that would be red flag number one. Children with obsessive compulsive disorder taking the medication were most at risk for becoming hostile, 17 times higher probability than the rest of those in the clinical study. In a Swedish study, researchers looked at information in over 850,000 patients. It's the largest national database of dispensed medications in the world. They then compared violent crimes committed during a 3-year period and compared to violent crimes committed by the same individuals when not taking the medications. When age was taken into effect, a significant association was apparent between violent crime convictions and SSRI use in patients between the ages of 15 and 24. That's when we start cooking their brains.
Mm-hmm. The other drug would be Adderall.
Yes, Adderall.
Used for ADHD.
Adderall, Ritalin. Those are all, and that's the...
they're big ones.
That's the speed. That's the speed effect. So you give the speed effect, and then that gets their personalities and their brains all out of order, and then you give them the antidepressant. So this is an important topic. It really is. And I just want to give you a few examples, because we could do probably 30 minutes on this. I'll sort through here. And these are some of the ones that you may recognize modern day. Because this goes all the way back into 1987 when these drugs first came on the market. 1998, 15-year-old Kip Kinkle shot both of his parents and then carried his guns to school where he murdered two classmates and shot 22 more. He was on Prozac. 1999, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold killed 12 students, one teacher, himself, and wounded 23 others during the Columbine school shooting. He had been prescribed Zoloft and then Luvox. 2001, Christopher Pittman, 12-year-old, prescribed Zoloft, which caused him to become agitated, jittery, and hallucinations. Pittman told psychiatrist Dr. Lynette Atkins he heard voices telling him, kill, 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 do it. And then he did. He shot his grandparents and burned their house down. 2001, do you remember the story of Andrea Yates?
Yes.
She drowned all five of her children. She was taking Effexor and was suffering from delusions about satanic possession. I mean, there are reams of these stories. James Holmes, remember the Batman movie killer?
Mm-hmm.
2012, while taking a sertraline, while walking into the show of The Dark Knight with two .40 caliber pistols, an AR-style .223 rifle, and a 12-gauge shotgun, killed 12 people, injured 70 others. In his personal notebook, which he sent to a psychiatrist the same day as the shooting, shows that as the medication decreased his anxiety, he lost his fear of consequences. As the dosage became higher, he became more obsessive and psychotic. 2013, at the time of the Washington Navy Yard shooting, my brother was in the building that day. Thank God he was all right. Aaron Alexis was a civilian contractor working at the yard. He was prescribed trazodone that works much like an SSRI to increase serotonin levels in the brain. He killed 12 people and injured 8 others. Then there's Ivan Lopez, the 34-year-old U.S. soldier who shot 15 of his comrades, killing 3 of them at Fort Hood, Texas. He was undergoing mental health treatment at the time at the VA, and he was taking SSRI. So, Charleston shooting, Dylan Roof, remember him killing all the blacks? Race crime? We then find out, and it's always after the case, he was on antidepressants as well. The 2008 Virginia Tech shooter, Song Hyu Cho, had multiple interactions with mental health departments on campus, some for suicidal ideation, yet his parents nor the authorities were never notified, didn't think of telling anybody. We find out that he also was taking SSRI. So it is a laundry list. And again, I want to caution, these drugs do help thousands and millions of people, and thank God. But we just don't really, we're now finding out the long-term effects of these drugs when you start people as young as 12 years old.
And with the drug manufacturers, how would we ever be able to get a study going? I mean, are there studies going on this type of reaction?
It seems like that's a good question. Ever since the Swedish study, which kind of like blew everybody away, they've sort of poo-pooed it.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of been buried.
Money, money, money.
And I understand, look, there, as I said, there are people who are helped by these drugs.
Right.
But the thing is, you need to be under the strict supervision of a physician while taking them. And you may have to make sure that, because a lot of people, what happens is they start feeling better and they stop taking them. And then that's even worse.
Yes.
Because then you bottom out, you go in the opposite direction, or you need to have your dosage adjusted under the supervision of a doctor. And unfortunately, and now we're very quick to medicate children. You know, we don't, that's how we control behavior problems in school. We don't spank. The parents can't spank because the children now are savvy enough to call the cops and accuse you of child abuse. So now what they do is they just medicate. And the chickens are coming home to roost. And we've seen this problem since, you can look at it, cause and effect. 1987, these drugs came on the market. in the last 35 years is when we've had the vast majority of school shootings, and just not school shootings, other market shootings, nightclubs, business places, etc. Anyway, I think you should keep that in mind as well. And there have been some that suggest that that they should be included in the background check, not to deny a firearm, but that would trigger a more extensive background check. But again, I don't know if that's the answer or not, but I just think it's worth at least discussing. All right, so we're going to be hearing a lot more about this, I'm sure, in the coming days and weeks regarding this incident. I want to segue over to the World Economic Forum, because that has been given short shrift here in the last several days. And this is where the globalists meet, the people that are plotting the demise of free markets, of capitalism, and want to be able to control every component and aspect of your life. The supervillain in this one isn't George Soros, although he's a big advocate. It's Klaus Schwab. He spoke in Davos, Switzerland, the other day, and warned, basically, I just want you to listen to this globalist doublespeak as to who he thinks that is going to be in control, and what they have in store for us.
Let's also be clear. The future is not just happening. The future is built by us, by a powerful community as you here in this room. We have the means to improve the states of the world. But two conditions are necessary. The first one is that we act all as stakeholders of larger communities. That we serve not our only self-interests, but we serve the community. That's what we call stakeholder responsibility. And second, that we collaborate. And this is the reason why you find many opportunities here during the meeting to engage into very action and impact-oriented initiatives to make progress related to specific issues on the global agenda.
Yeah, and so a couple things you'll notice. The future is built by us. Me, who's us? Well, the globalist elites. He's not talking to you or me. He's talking to a room of power brokers and the world's wealthy and elitist globalists.
Where is that, Nuremberg?
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
And then he says that we act all as stakeholders of larger communities, that we are collaborators. It's just a fancy way of saying socialism. That's what they're talking about here, worldwide socialism. And remember, the Nazis and the communists were the first socialists. So then they turn there, and we know this is where it's being directed, because most of Europe and our friends in Australia, unfortunately, have already knuckled under, and some of our allies, except for Israel and a few others. But the Australian e-safety commissioner, her name is Julie Inman Grant, she told the WEF, we got to do something about this nasty little thing called freedom of speech.
We are finding ourselves in a place where we have increasing polarization everywhere, and everything feels binary when it doesn't need to be. So I think we're going to have to think about a recalibration of a whole range of human rights that are playing out online, you know, from freedom of speech to the freedom to, you know, to be free from online violence, or the right of data protection to the right to child dignity.
Yeah, we need to recalibrate this whole concept of freedom of speech. Well, you've already done that in Australia. No thanks. We'll keep our freedom of speech here in the United States just fine. And we've seen an example of this over in Switzerland, where Jack Posobiec and his news crew, he's a citizen journalist. He works for Human Events, and he's on with our good buddy Steve Bannon, the War Room, a lot. Jack is a former naval intelligence officer, and he and his news crew were detained at gunpoint for an hour by the World Economic Forum police. Why? Because they dare cover the event, I guess they thought, in a negative fashion. But again, that's what passes for journalism these days. And then we have a Sweden minister by the name of Kristin Botten. Here's what she said about this transformation from free markets and capitalism into this stakeholder responsibility. That's what they go, shareholder. That's what it is. Shareholder responsibility in the larger community.
We need to accept that there will be some pain in the process. The pace that we need will open up for missteps. It will open up for shortages on energy. It will create inflationary pressures. And maybe we need to start talking about that, that pain is actually worth it. Because if we don't, there's no business case, there's no economy, there's no welfare. But so far, I think we have been a little bit careful actually talking about the pain in the short term that is likely to come from this very important change.
Yeah. What a dupe.
Yeah.
What an absolute useful idiot. There's going to be pain, but it's going to be worth it. We're not going to have energy. We're not going to have food. There's going to be misery, but let's stop talking about it. And that's exactly what it is. Socialism is shared misery from the country class. The ruling class don't suffer because they have all the access to the resources and the money and the banks and the gold, etc. They won't suffer. Never did in the Soviet Union. Won't. Never did in Cuba or Venezuela. But the people did. The people suffered through all sorts of shortages. I remember my parents when they went over to Poland when it was still part of the Eastern Bloc of the former Soviet Union, when my youngest brother was involved in a gymnastic competition. People were lining up for everything there. A loaf of bread, flowers, whatever they could get their hands on. Publicly, they would tell you, oh, this is great. We love this form of government. You should try it.
Well, they have to.
Yeah. Privately. And what they didn't know is my one of my grandmothers spoke fluent Polish. I'm half Irish and half Polish. One of my grandmothers spoke fluent Polish, and she was there with the translator, and they would secretly be telling the translator, can you ask them, meaning my parents, to sponsor us to get us the hell out of here? So, I mean, they're miserable.
Yeah.
These were proud Poles that were absolutely miserable. So this German guy, his name is Robert Habeck. He says, we got to change the way that the markets are. This is a reference to free markets and capitalism. We got to change the rules of the market.
First of all, I would say that we have to stick to global markets. If we are now, and this is a tendency I feel everywhere in the world, also in my country as well, also in Europe, if we are now saying, okay, first of all, Germany and other countries are caring for themselves, then we will increase the crisis. If we are only caring for our own food supply or energy supply, it must have a disastrous effect on the prices, on the market. So first of all, we have to keep the markets open.
That's a direct shot at Trump. That is an absolute direct shot at America First, the MAGA agenda, that America should be first, not last. You know, it's not our job to feed the world. It's not our job to protect the world and police the world. Now, will we be a player on the world markets? Will we trade with other countries? Will we help provide food? And yeah, absolutely, as part of a responsible player on the world scene. But they're talking about they want to give away their sovereignty and become part of this great cabal, if you will, you know, the larger community. And they want the United States taken down. And they can't get to where they want to go without taking us down. So just keep that. One of the ways they're going to do that, besides the first pandemic, now we got the monkeypox, nonsense, is through this climate change, which is just a disguised form of control, of communistic control. And I can't remember the name of the guy's name. He's a CEO of Alibaba, you know, the Chinese Amazon.
Right.
And listen to what he says about what they're developing now. You're going to be able to track how much of a carbon footprint that you're leaving on this planet.
We're developing, through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. What does that mean? That's, where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. And what are they going to do with that?
Right. Exactly. That's my first question. Oh, this is just going to help you track your carbon footprint. You'll be able, no matter where you travel, no matter what you eat, no matter what activity that you may be engaged in. Oh, I don't know, like procreating. We're going to be able to send a message. Hey, stop that. Knock it off. You got too many people in your family. This is scary, scary stuff. This is right out of the Pfizer guy the other day wanting us to swallow a pill with a microchip in it.
Well, I guess we'll get social credits.
Right.
Because they'll be knowing everything that we do under the guise of carbon footprint, my ass.
Yeah. That is just, but this is what they're plotting and planning or trying to sell to themselves. And nobody's covering this thing. Have you seen or heard any of these clips or sound bites on the state-run media or in your local newspaper? You're right. It's crickets. It's only the, you know, the podcast community and talk radio and some websites on the internet that are covering this kind of thing. And right now, everybody 24/7, wall to wall, is on the Uvalde, Texas shooting. And I understand that, but you can't cover that to the detriment of the really important news. This is worldwide domination we're talking about here. And how they're going to get there here in the United States? Well, they're going to kill fossil fuels. The other day, Chairman Joe said this. He said the quiet part out loud, speaking to reporters in Japan on Monday. He admitted that the current record gas crisis in America, is all on purpose.
And when it comes to the gas prices, we're going through an incredible transition that is taking place that, God willing, when it's over, will be stronger and the world will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels when this is over.
We also learned this past weekend that the Biden regime wasn't issuing any new drilling permits during this current crisis. Then, when they were confronted with it, they said it was a math error.
He's the great savior.
Yeah. But this is intentional. And if you don't think that soundbite isn't convincing enough, we put together a montage of Chairman Joe basically saying over the course of his campaign and of his illegitimate presidency what his intents are with gasoline, oil, and fossil fuels.
Would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated.
No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period.
I guarantee you, we're going to end fossil fuel.
What about, say, stopping fracking and stopping new pipeline infrastructure?
Yes. New pipeline.
No more, no new fracking.
We argue to get rid of fossil fuels.
I've argued against any more oil drilling or gas drilling on federal lands.
No one's going to build a coal-fired plant again, and we're going to get rid of the ones we have now.
Have a transition from the oil industry, yes.
Would you be willing to sacrifice some of that growth, even knowing potentially that it could displace thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of blue-collar workers, in the interest of transitioning to that greener economy?
The answer is yes.
He cost 40,000 jobs in the energy sector by canceling the Keystone XL pipeline. That was his first day in office. He has created this energy crisis. Gasoline was already up significantly before, quote-unquote, Putin's war. And it's continuing to go up. $6 a gallon, maybe by the end of the summer, and maybe even more.
Well, the globalists are getting a lot of help from old Joe. This bastard's trying to take us down. It's that simple.
It is. It's intentional. So this, you know, we're getting some of the media's, it's incompetence, and he hasn't hit his stride yet, and he inherited a tough economy. No, he inherited a great economy.
Yep.
We were the dominant energy force in the world. And we didn't need to import a damn drop of oil under President Trump. He actually replenished our strategic petroleum reserve at an all-time cheap price because we were able to drive the markets. But now we're slave to the markets. We're slave to Putin, slave to Maduro in Venezuela. And who knows, maybe even the Iranians. That'll be up next. All right, so that being said, and the baby formula thing, I don't. Everybody's talking about this Operation Fly formula.
Yeah.
You know, that they are comparing that to the Berlin airlift. Let me tell you about the Berlin airlift. It went not just for a couple days, it went on for almost a year. because the Soviets had blockaded Berlin and they were starving them out. But one plane carrying 78,000 pounds of specially infant formula, yeah, that helps mothers that need it, and that's fine. But you created the crisis, and you knew. And now even Democrats are admitting that they knew, and they should have done something last November or in February. They had mothers on the tarmac in Indianapolis the other day, waiting with clutching their children in their arms. You know, can't get baby formula in the United States. In Biden's America, there's a shortage of baby formula, but there's plenty of fentanyl. Plenty of that to go around. And so the good news here out of this whole segment is that we've talked about this, about the ceding of U.S. sovereignty at the World Health Assembly, at the WHO, the Biden amendments, as they are known. The House Freedom Caucus came out against them this week. Talked to my Congressman Andy Harris. He and the rest of the House Freedom Caucus members were able to launch a letter and cause a bunch of ruckus over. The good news here is that 12 of the 13 amendments have now been removed. And this, and there's a United Kingdom physician by the name of Zach Cox. He was an integral force in helping get these, because they wanted judicial review of all these amendments. He wanted to make sure that the one remaining Biden amendment reduces the period of time in which a nation can withdraw its vote on an amendment to the international health regulations from 18 months to 6 months, which is still troublesome. But the big enchilada, where we would have to be ceding our sovereignty over to the WHO, that amendment has been removed for the moment. But keep an eye on it, because I don't trust these people as far as I can tell them.
Me either.
They could reintroduce it in the middle of the night. They give you the old rope-a-dope, you know, the bait and switch. Oh, yeah, that's dead. That's dead. And then, you know, we read the next day, oh, by the way, it passed in the middle of the night. That's how they operate in not only here in the United States, but on foreign shores as well. So you probably have heard the dust-up over Nancy Pelosi, who believes in her sick little mind that she's a devout Catholic, yet she's one of the most radical pro-abortion people in the country. And the Archbishop of San Francisco, Cordy Leone, he banned her from presenting herself to receive Holy Communion. And let me just tell you what Catholics believe. Catholics believe that the wafer, as you might know it, or that bread, is actually through transformation during a consecrated mass becomes the body of Jesus Christ. And same for the wine. It becomes the blood of Jesus Christ. It is, you become one with Jesus. It is called Holy Eucharist, or the Holy Communion, because it is believed to be the sacrament of all sacraments. It is the most holy sacrament that one can obtain. And in addition to that, you have to be in a state of grace in order to receive Holy Communion, meaning you must have been absolved of your sins, especially the mortal ones, you know, like abortion and murder and all the other really grave and mortal sins that Catholics believe you should. And again, if you go to confession and you are given absolution, that's one step, but also is repentance as well, meaning that you must repent for your sins. You must vow not to repeat them. So you can't go into confession on a Saturday night and say, I've been advocating abortion. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. And he comes and says, we'll say, on Our Father, five Hail Marys, and everything will be okay. And then you go back out on Monday and you lobby for it again? No, doesn't work like that. So that is what Catholics believe. And, of course, the woman that played a nun once in a movie who claims to be a Christian, I think, Whoopi Goldberg is Catholic. She lashed out at the Archbishop on The View the other day.
The abortion rights battle is starting to blur the lines between church and state. The Archbishop of San Francisco is calling for Speaker Nancy Pelosi to be denied receiving communion because of her pro-choice stance. He's one of the priests who also called for President Biden to be denied sacrament. This is not your job, dude. That is not up to you to make that decision. You know, what is the saying? It's kind of amazing. But, you know, what is the point of communion, right? It's for sinners. It's for sinners. It's the reward of saints, but the bread of sinners. How dare you? How dare you? That is, if Pope Francis says that that's the issue, but
Pope Francis disagrees with you, Whoopi. I know that's a shocker. Pope Francis is opposed to abortion. He also believes it's a mortal sin. He might take a different approach because he's more of a lefty, like the Archbishop of D.C., Wilton Gregory, who seems to be okay with her taking communion. But no, it's not. The communion isn't for sinners. It's for people that have absolved of their sins and vow to repent their sins. And by the way, the catechism of the first of the Catholic Church, which has been around since the first century of the church, has affirmed rather the moral evil of every procured abortion. This teaching has not changed. It remains unchangeable. It means it's non-negotiable, dudette.
And you know, before a lot of communion is distributed, you do an act of contrition.
Correct.
You know, to be contrite, to confess and be cleared. So you can have the communion in good conscience. Know what I mean?
Yeah. And part of that, again, it varies from different Christian religions, but, you know, part of that is, oh, my God, I'm heartily sorry for having offended thee. And again, that is an act of contrition. If you have not been able to get to the confession, then that is what you say. But you can't go out and say an act of contrition and then go right out the very next day and resume your evil, amoral, and unchristian-like behavior.
And what did she mean by blur the lines of church and state at the beginning of her statement? I mean, is she trying to say that because Nancy is a senator or, excuse me, a congresswoman that, you know, she should be able to have communion just because of that? I don't understand that.
Yeah, no. And here's what I think what they're trying to have us believe is that she, as a quote-unquote devout Catholic, as is allegedly Joe Biden, they don't want to impose their will on voters in their, you know, in their district. But that's a very, I think, unstable argument. First off,
yes,
they're going to be Jewish people. They're going to be atheists. They're going to be Baptists. They're going to be Muslims. They're going to be Buddhists that live in their districts. And you're not imposing your will by voting your conscience.
No.
Okay, if you're violating your own personal faith, if you can't separate that, then you have no business being in public office.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's a whole nother argument. And Pelosi addressed that on the morning schmo the other day with Mika. Here's her defense as to why she thinks she should not be banned from communion.
I wonder about death penalty, which I am opposed to. Mm. So is the church, but they take no action against people who may not share their view. Thank you for referencing the Gospel of Matthew.
First off, they're not the same thing.
No.
They're completely opposite. And the church catechism, the Catholic Church anyway, believes that the state has every right to sanction its most evil, murderous offenders with the death penalty. The church itself is pro-life and does not sanction the death penalty, but they're okay if a state has the death penalty on the books, because the state or a country has a right to remove. For instance, what if there was somebody in prison that was ordering hits on Catholics from inside the prison? Well, the church says the state has every right to try that person if they found guilty and apply the death penalty. So again, and look, I don't know how many babies out there have actually raped or murdered or robbed somebody.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. That's the thing. The death penalty, the person made a choice. The baby inside a womb does not have a choice.
Absolutely. So that was weak. It was a nice try on Pelosi's part to explain that. Time for the cringe moment of the day. It's Stacey Abrams, who, by the way, did win the Democrat nomination. She'll be facing off against Brian Kemp in Georgia. I don't know why Donald Trump endorsed David Perdue. That's maybe we'll get to the primary results on Friday and discuss those. But here's what Stacey Abrams said. Remember, the early voting is off the charts. We did that on Monday. We told you that in Georgia, this state bill 2, which was supposed to be the death knell for democracy and voting in Georgia, actually went the opposite direction. And she had an interesting take on it.
The question about voter suppression and voter turnout is causation without correlation. you can make mistakes even when you know what you're talking about. It's correlation without causation. We know that increased turnout has nothing to do with suppressant.
I'm a total bumbling idiot.
increased turnout has nothing to do with voter suppression. Yeah, because there isn't any suppression going on. Okay. Then she tried to argue that, well, that doesn't mean that maybe the black turnout was suppressed. No, the black turnout was up like significantly, like 100,000.
I know nothing. Nothing.
It's unreal, is it not?
Yeah.
Unhinged moment du jour.
Donald J. Trump is now president of the United States.
President Trump. To adjust the microphone as a tall man.
Something is wrong with Chairman Joe. I want you to listen carefully as he seems to be out of breath while he's standing there talking to somebody.
It's affecting a lot of families. But we have released over 257,000 million barrels of oil, I should say. Us and the rest of the world, we're convinced to get involved. It's helped, but it's not been enough. We also find ourselves in a situation where we have food shortages. Food shortages because of Ukraine. There are literally millions of bushels of oil, of grain being held up in Ukraine. That would fundamentally impact positively on the market. This is going to be a haul. This is going to take some time.
He seems to have lost some zip on his fastball.
But he's wheezing.
Yeah. All right, so what's going on with that?
It sounds like he's got scuba apparatus on.
Yeah, it does. It sounds like he was like an extra in a Star Wars movie or something. Maybe he played the stuntman to Darth Vader. Or something. That's bizarre. What's going on with that? I thought maybe he walked, down the steps from Air Force One and he was winded. But no, I went back and looked at the footage on it. He was just standing there talking. So maybe allergies or something was bothering. Who knows? That just was weird. All right. Our Pockets of Patriots for you today. We wanted to give a shout out to the folks in Westminster, Maryland. Thank you for downloading and subscribing and make sure you rate and review us. Secaucus, New Jersey was one of the top 10 downloads this week.
All right.
Okay.
To our Australian friends in Sydney, New South Wales, thank you for listening. Lucerne Valley, California weighs in as well. Those are our Pockets of Patriots for today. Don't forget on Friday's episode, new episode will drop, and we'll have our Outrages of the Week. A lot of great candidates this week, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that.
Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Casey Show. I want to say thanks to our executive producer, Joe Hosny-Armacost.
Yes, sir.
And to our associate producer, Michelle Drosella.
You're welcome.
And our other associate producers, Logan and Hunter Casey. Back on Friday with the next episode of the Sean Casey Show. Until then, stay free.